All right, welcome back, Tarek, Alcoholic Addict.
Hey.
No, it was loud. All right, no, I like it. Yes, page 83. Here's a guiding principle for you. The way we live makes so much noise, there's not really much we need to say. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry will not fit the bill. You guys, let me give you the definitions of sorry and then amends so we can be clear on as we wrap this up. I'm sorry or an apology is a polite gesture that sometimes does not imply admission of guilt or regret, but only a desire to clear the ground a bit so you can move forward. Amends. To compensate others for the harm caused with a sincere desire to correct the behavior of the past and for the future, to make right wrongs. Much different. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that God show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. This is why big book studies in of themselves are ludicrous. If you're just there studying the book, if studying the big book gets you excited about doing the work out of the big book, I'm all for it. But what I watched in my early years of recovery was a lot of guys that went to a lot of big book studies that were cheating on their wives, that were not paying their taxes, that were doing things that I did not believe were part of the spiritual path. And so I was moved away from them. There were a few men in this group of men that I was hanging out with. And to me, they were just studying the spiritual life. It was theoretical. It wasn't actually put into practical application, but they could quote the big book. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than any words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness or 20 miles into the forest would make a skeptic out of anyone. I can't just turn around and walk out of the forest. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we'd right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. They've either passed away or you don't know their name and you don't know how to find them. You write an honest letter. You send them an honest letter. I think I mentioned earlier the letters that I wrote. There were a lot of women that I harmed that I had no last names for. And what I did was I wrote letters as if I was making the amends, and I read all the letters to a female in the program. Pretty tough to sit in front of a female and tell her through these letters what you did to other females. So that's another method. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble, without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. So the next two paragraphs are the nine-step promises. You guys have heard them if you've been to meetings. They're wonderful promises, but they're not the only promises. And they're some of my least favorite, to be honest with you. I got a bunch of other promises in the big book that I really love. And I think that the distaste I have for the nine-step promises comes from the fact that people come into the program and they work the promises. They'll sit around and just go to meetings for 30 days and say the promises are coming true. You'll be amazed before you're halfway through. What? You'll be amazed before you're halfway through what? Making amends. They say if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. The phase of development is making amends. Making amends. If you're halfway through, these promises show up and they stick. But what do? We watch people come in and work the promises and wait for the steps to come true. You watch it all the time. So Step 10 is not about writing inventory. It's about awareness as I go through my day interacting with God's kids. I had this talk with somebody earlier today about the 10th step in inventory. You will constantly hear people refer to the 10th step at the meeting as if it's a writing of inventory. There's a reason people talk about the 10th step that way. It's because the way the 10th step's written in our big book is different from the way the 10th step's written in the 12 and 12. In the 12 and 12, Bill talks about writing a spot check inventory. He talks about an assets versus liabilities inventory. And he talks about an inventory of your day. He literally describes them in that fashion. What he does that's amazing in the 12 and 12 is he talks about this idea of prayer, meditation, and inventory at the same time. And that, to me, is literally how 10 and 11 can be used. And Brandon's going to focus on 11. I want to focus on 10. But 10 is the ability to go to that place within and bring that all into, bring it out into all of your activities. So let's see how the 10 steps written in the big book. It says, this thought of making amends brings us to step 10. Another point I want to make clear is that you can take 10 and 11 and turn the intent of prayer and meditation and taking an inventory of yourself throughout the course of the day and channel all that energy into making amends. Your meditation life can be around a vision of what it's going to be like when I make these amends. Your prayer life, God, show me who to make amends to next. How do I find this person? Give me the willingness to make this amends. Channel that energy through those steps into making amends. The reason you don't go to a lot of meetings and hear discussion topics about making amends is because very few people want to make their amends. The majority, I believe, sounds so judgmental. I've seen a lot of people over the years talk about making amends, but when you dig deep and start talking to them about which amends they made, they always made the easy ones. They made the ones with the family. I get the family is devastated by us. I knew when I showed up to make amends to my family, they weren't going to throw me out. They were going to cry, and we were all going to cry, and we were going to be really heartfelt, but they were not going to spit on me and throw me out. The people that I hadn't seen in 10 and 15 years, that's the amends that were the most difficult. Pulling somebody out of the past to say, look, man, I totally did you wrong. I regret what I did. This is what I did, and I need to make it right. But you don't find a lot of that. People will go make the easy amends, and then that's it. They feel better now.
And then they do that thing that we talked about called living amends that doesn't exist in the book. Or they stand behind this this thing that it says, you know, don't have to make amends to people if I'm going to harm them or others, and I'm others. But the book's real clear that we're always hard on ourselves and considerate of others. Okay, so I can't be others. The other line that people I hear a lot in meetings is the last line right before the ninth step promises. They'll say something like, well, I don't crawl before anyone, so I don't have to go make amends to that guy because he harmed me more than I harmed him. They don't read the same book I read. Because they gave us several pages on why... made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Does anybody know what all means?
All.
Okay, back to you.
This idea of living amends, I don't know where it comes from. I go make amends to someone. I ask them, I tell them, I share with them the harms that I'm clear on. I ask them if I left anything out. I ask them, do you need to tell me how any of this makes you feel? And what do I need to do to make things right? And then I do that. There's no more living amends. Now it's about practicing the principles in all my affairs. I think people that use living amends are trying to find a way out of making amends. That's what I believe. It's not in the big book, so I don't talk about it. But I just did talk about it because I don't agree with it. So, So the thought of making amends brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue. So the word continue doesn't imply that I stop and do this at the end of the day. It means I'm doing it as I go along. I continue to take personal inventory, and I continue to set right any new mistakes as I go along. I vigorously, with energy, commence this way of living as I clean up the past. So as I'm making amends, I begin this new way of life. I've entered the world of the Spirit. My next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So my next function is not to maintain anything. My next function is to grow in understanding the spirit world and effectiveness in the human world. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. There's that word continue. Continue to watch. There's the first spiritual practice of the 10th step. We watch. What do we watch for? We watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we get our second spiritual practice. We ask God at once to remove them. It does not mean He's going to remove them at once, but we ask at once. If they persist, we discuss them with someone immediately. Immediately implies right now. And we make amends quickly. Quickly implies pretty quick. And if we've harmed anyone, we do that quickly. Then we resolutely, with determination and at once, we turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. That doesn't sound like writing inventory to me. It sounds like I'm taking an inventory. I'm staying awake and alert all day long. This is how I stay connected to God. Brandon's going to talk about what he does when he wakes up and what we do as we end our day. But what do we do during the day? It's a combination of something he does. He's going to talk about in his 11th step combined with what I just described to you. It doesn't say anything about being a maintenance step. I always hear people refer to 10, 11, and 12 as maintenance steps. I just don't believe that because the book says we've now... The first 9 steps are the launching pad into the world of the Spirit. The door opens. And how do we go in and begin to communicate in this new world? The 10th and 11th step. That's the new language. That's the new language in the spirit world. And so if we don't get active in 10 and 11, that door that we just opened as we've been launched into the realm of the Spirit will begin to close. And the 10th step is by far the most difficult step to practice. It's so limitless, what you can do with this step. You can take the word watch. When I first got introduced to this idea, I put the word watch in my car. I put it all over my apartment. It was everywhere. And all I was doing was paying attention to what was inside of me. And so I watched. If I got fearful, if I got resentful, if I got selfish, I watched. God, keep me present. God, remove my fear. Direct my attention to what you would have me be. God, remove my resentments. Remove this type of thinking from my thought life. Ask. Ask. So I worked with watch, then I moved into ask. It was watch, ask. Then it was turn my thoughts. So I went through a period of time where I became fearful, or I became frustrated, or I became selfish or self-centered. I was constantly thinking about myself. I would turn my thoughts to the men I sponsored. Pick up the phone, call Brandon. Pick up the phone and call the other Brandon. Pick up the phone and call Drew. Pick up the phone and call Adam. That was the practice. Turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Practice a code of love and tolerance. Make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. And then the next paragraph. Tarek, you've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even cocaine and alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. I will seldom be interested in drugs and alcohol. If tempted, I jump back from them as from a hot flame. I don't make a choice to jump back. I'm just taken back. I react sanely and normally, and then I find that this happened automatically. Most of the thought and effort has been in steps 4 through 9. The greatest promise of all is the miracle that there is no problem and no choice involved. It just doesn't exist for me anymore today. But this whole thing happened automatically. This new attitude towards drugs and alcohol was given to me without any thought or effort on my part. It just came. That's the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it. Neither am I avoiding temptation. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I haven't even sworn it off. Instead, the problem has been removed. What's the problem? The illusion that I have a choice. It doesn't exist for me today. I am neither cocky nor am I afraid. This is my experience, and this is how I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. Unlike the nine-step promises, which happened due to alcohol and drugs, when alcohol and drugs were working, they created the nine-step promises. The nine-step promises never, the 10-step promises were not created by alcohol when it was working, and by drugs when they were working. So it's easy to let up on this spiritual program of action and rest on my past accomplishments. I'm headed for trouble if I do, because crack cocaine is a subtle foe. I'm not cured of my addiction or my alcoholism. What I really have is a daily stay of execution. That's what reprieve means. Contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with me constantly. Not just at the end of the day. This is another aspect of the 10th step. These thoughts must go with me constantly. I can exercise my willpower along this line all I wish. This is the proper use of the will. So on page 62, we made a decision. And then on page 85, what's that, 23 pages later?
Yes.
We've been restored to sanity. How many people in here pray? How many people in here meditate? How many people work with vision? It's about to go on right? Mm-hmm. The big book believes in vision work. It just said it in the 10th step. Every day is a day when I must carry a vision of God's will into all my activities. We create visions and we take them into our meditation life and our prayer life. Prayer, meditation, and vision work. These are all spiritual practices. Position of neutrality is a gift. When you cease fighting anything or everyone and everything, you get to experience the position of neutrality. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If you've carefully followed these directions, you've begun to sense the flow of God's Spirit into you. To some extent, you've become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. The tenth step is what sharpens your sixth sense. Sixth sense is God consciousness, and we've been stressing this word over the weekend. Consciousness, conscious presence. Are you conscious of the presence of God? That's what this is talking about here. The sixth sense is intuitive thought. And Brandon, I'm sure, is going to tell you some stories about what it means to follow your sixth sense. Intuition. It'll have you doing some crazy things, what appears to be crazy. But if you trust your God, you trust your God and you go with it and you see what happens. And so, should I tell the story now about the letter and the business? I'll tell that story. Never mind. Okay. Good. That's the 10th step. It's an abyss. It's limitless. I'll tell you guys, I was around Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous for 18 months. And I began to suffer. And I don't want to tell too much because I'll tell some of this later tonight. I heard a man by the name of Mark Houston, who's now passed away, talk about the 10th step on a CD I put in from after I was driving home from a meeting. And he started the meeting off with, "I love meetings that start with meditation." And he talked about being present and not being wanting to be anywhere else. That the only reality of his life was where he was. And the only reality of my life right now is I'm right here at the Bridges of Hope. And I listened to him talk about the 10th step the same way I just described it to you. And it became way more than doing steps through 4 through 9 at the end of the day or throughout the day. This became my tool for staying awake. Staying awake. Because most humans are asleep, dreaming they're awake. Their eyes are wide open, but they're completely asleep. A man by the name of Anthony DeMello says most humans are born in their sleep. They live in their sleep. They die in their sleep. They procreate in their sleep, and they die in their sleep. They never truly wake up. This step is how we wake up. Brandon?
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Brandon.
Brandon.
So if I've properly done steps 4 and 5, and I see the defects and I want them removed, and I pray about that in 6 and 7, and I go out and I start making amends and I repair the wreckage of the past, and I continue to watch for those same defects in the 10th step over the course of my day, I get to experience this sense of presence, this sense of being, the sense of belonging with the universe. And if you're an alcoholic or addict that was like I was, which had to stay up all night and try to shut the place down and then try to go find some more and then more and then more and then more and then more, and that you didn't stop until you hit something or somebody. The 11th step's really cool. Because you can go to some really wild, far out places if you continue to cultivate the 11th step. So what's the 11th step? Bottom of page 85. 11th step suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than us are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude, which we discussed on page 55, and we work at it. It would be easy to be vague and very conceptual about this matter. Yet, we believe we can make some definite, very precise, and valuable suggestions. So now we have this thing called the evening review. And in the evening review, there's two schools of thought here. The first school of thought is that the reason why we do the evening review is before the morning routine in the book is because when we first get sober, we don't have the opportunity to do the morning routine before the evening review, so we start with the evening review. But my personal belief is that the evening review is part of my morning discipline. And that if I don't do the evening review, that I'm not starting off my morning discipline properly. But there's a bunch of questions here. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful? Were we selfish? Were we dishonest? Were we afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind? Were we loving? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? More instructions here, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Does anybody know what worry is? It's future. Do you know what remorse and morbid reflection are? Past. Where is the only place we experience God?
Present.
Right here, right now. So if I'm out in worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, that's going to diminish my usefulness to others and therefore make me useless to God. After making my review, I ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective action measures should be taken. This, I prefer to write it out. If you write it out, it shouldn't take you more than maybe 5, at the most 10 minutes if you're actually reflective on it. It'll give you a good check of how you're doing over the course of your day in terms of how you're actually practicing the 10th step. It'll see if you're harming anyone. And then if I have this list, do I owe an apology to somebody? Do I owe an amends? If I get that out of the evening review, then I write it in my schedule for the next day so that when I get up in the morning, I can figure it out. I can figure out when to do that. So then we go into the before meditation part of the morning routine, which is on awakening. Notice it doesn't say on awakening Monday through Friday. Notice it doesn't say on awakening 4 days a week. It says on awakening. So to me that implies every day, including the weekend. Let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. There's an implication in that statement. If I have plans for the day, I probably need to have plans for the day. So if I'm reviewing them, I've already figured that out. As part of my practice, I do that as part of my evening review. Before I begin, I ask God to direct my thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Okay, so I have an experience with this particular sentence where I didn't do it when I first woke up. For a long time, I was doing it when I sat down. Now, as part of my morning, like my eyes come open, and I ask God to remove, to direct my thinking, especially that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. Because I had a particular morning that I didn't think I could screw anything up in the morning. But here, I get out of bed, and I'm just getting up to go pee. And I kick the corner of the bed. And then I'm thinking to myself, why do we have this big-ass bed anyways? It hangs too far out. So I'm starting to get a little bit irritated. Then as I'm walking to the bathroom, I nail my shoulder on this towel bar that I absolutely despise. It's hanging off the wall that I clip on and I twist my shoulder. And now I'm like, I'm mad at my wife again because this towel bar has now absolutely wrecked my shoulder, and I'm sitting there peeing and my shoulder's throbbing and my toes killing, and I just had to start laughing because I realized that I'm already in self-pity and I didn't even start my day yet. So I've got to start this thing immediately because I can screw up going to the bathroom. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us our brains to use. Our thought life, that's kind of a weird word, isn't it? Thought life? Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is clear to wrong motives. What would happen if all of my thoughts were prayers? What would happen if every thought that I ever sent out to the universe was simply a prayer to the universe that this is what I want to happen? And what if that actually happened?
It's the best of prayers.
Would they be?
No. We wouldn't have any friends.
Right. I can show you to a couple pieces of literature that will prove to you that that is the case. Now are we starting to understand why it's important for my thought life to be a little bit cleaner and purer than it used to be? Think about all the harm I'm dumping in the universe just out of my thoughts. Can't be hurting anybody with these thoughts. What if I am? Ponder that one. My thought life will be placed in a much higher plane when my thinking is cleared of wrong motives. So let's say I'm God just for a minute. And if I'm God, and I'm going to send myself down to earth. And I'm going to trick myself into not thinking that I'm actually God. And to make sure that I don't really fully realize that I'm God, I'm going to put in certain kind of fail safes and governors and things like that that limit my power so that I can't actually go and destroy the universe. Okay? Let's say that I actually have the power to be God. So, if I want to gain more access to that power, I have to clear my thinking of wrong motives. And I have to become more pure, and I have to become more loving, and I have to be more in tune with what the overall is best for the overall universe. And as I do that, and my thoughts become in a much higher plane, I'm granted additional access to power. What if that happens? Wouldn't that be cool? In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course of action to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision. Here's some promises for you. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be a hunch or occasional inspiration gradually becomes part of the working mind. Can you imagine going to a counseling session and say, "So, how many sessions do I have to attend until I can relax and take it easy and not struggle and have intuitive inspiration show up in my day? How many counseling sessions do I have to do that?" They're going to look at me and say, "I have no idea what you're talking about." But here's a promise. And this promise has happened in my life. And it's happened in my life as a result of deepening my experience with the 11th step. Being still in experience and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pray for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas, like wanting to drive from Tulsa, Oklahoma to Denver, Colorado overnight just to make an amend. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more in the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. So, as I've told you, I kind of like to mock God a little bit. And there was a morning that it is funny to me because I was mocking God and I was doing exactly what he wanted me to do. So I had gone to go drop off something for a customer, and I was in this building where there's a big landscape area in between five really tall buildings on the second floor, and on the first floor where you park, that's where you come in. And I was going to go to a meeting, but I was trying to kill some time, so I figured I didn't really have to use the restroom, but I'll go to the restroom anyways. And as I'm sitting there using the restroom, which is on the second floor, I have this thought of, I'm supposed to go outside. I'm peeing, and I'm thinking, why am I supposed to go outside? This is awful silly. And so I come outside, and I'm like, I look outside, and it's beautiful out there, and there's the landscape area, it's in between all these buildings, and I'm like, I don't want to go outside. And the thought says, go outside. And I'm like, okay, God, I'll go outside. So I go outside, and I stand out there for a minute, and I say, all right, I'm out here. What do you want? And I continue my mockery, and then I think, well, maybe I'm just supposed to come out here and enjoy the day. It's a nice morning. The air is crisp. The flowers are blooming. So maybe I'll walk around the outside of this building and then go around to the parking lot on the other side. So again, like, all right, fine. I'll mock you, God. I'll come out here. I'll do what you want. Maybe you just want me to enjoy these flowers. So fine. I'll go out here. I'm walking around. And I don't know where this white truck pulls up real slow. And there's this lady in the front seat. And she says, "Sir, I wonder if you can help me find this place that I'm looking for." And so then I had the thought of, okay, God just wanted me to help this person. And I'm still kind of mocking it a little bit, like, yeah, I'm going to help this person. And so I pull out my phone. I'm getting ready to plug the address in my GPS. And she shows me the address. And the address is 3200 Cobb Galleria Parkway, Suite 200, Atlanta, Georgia, 30339. How can I remember that? Because for 7 years of my career, I worked at 3200 Cobb Galleria Parkway, Suite 240, Atlanta, Georgia, 30339. Same building, four suites over, this lady's looking for. And I happen to know exactly where it is. And I'm mocking God because God sent me outside. And I just tell the lady, you go up here, you get to the stoplight, you turn left, you hit that next light, you turn left. When you hit the next light, you'll turn right, you go down the hill, it's right there on the left. That's where you need to be. And she said, oh my God, thank you so much. She says, we have been driving around looking for this place for 45 minutes and we just can't find it. And she's like, my husband, we set this appointment up months ago and we were worried that we were going to have to cancel it because we're going to be so late. When you do this as a way of life, God does all sorts of crazy ass shit to you. Puts you in some strange places that make no sense whatsoever until you experience it. So here I am thinking that I'm having one of these experiences where I'm doing some sort of absurd action and I'm being delivered exactly where I need to be delivered. So then there's this kind of break where the next line says, we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer, which implies that I've already meditated. So this to me is the line before meditation, after meditation. Right here, I read up to here, I stop, I meditate. When I'm done with meditation, I continue to read. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. There's a loophole in that, and I use it all the time. I can pray for certain things if it will help people in my family. I can pray for certain things that I will benefit if it mutually benefits other people. But I can't simply pray for things just for me, because it won't work. Because I'm a greedy son of a bitch and I'll try to take too much. If I'm God, it's a fail-safe I put in. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing so, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. This has happened a couple times for me. My wife generally does not enjoy it. Two of my sons partake in it with me from time to time, and every time they do it, they ask if we can do it some more. But it has to be on their terms. I can't push anybody else into a spiritual experience. But if they want to come along, I let them come along. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books. These come into my consciousness on a regular basis. They come into Tarek's consciousness on a regular basis. And it is crazy to me how the books that come into my consciousness end up building on top of themselves into the abyss of a spiritual experience that is so far beyond anything that I can explain to you in words. Is that I read one, it gives me one concept. I read another one, it takes that concept and goes deeper. I read another one, it goes deeper. I start to understand other spiritual texts at a much deeper level as a result of the spiritual books, outside reading, 11-step reading that this gives me. They're all over the place. There are these books that they just come into my existence. This one was published, not this one, but the one that made me buy this one was published in 1926. And it talks about the fact that our thoughts actually have the power to change things that happen in our world and has scientific evidence to prove it. Written in 1926. I bet nobody's read it. There's stuff like that out there that can deepen your relationship with the power of the universe so far beyond anything that your mind can possibly comprehend. But my basis comes from the 12 steps. My basis starts with my understanding of the spiritual experience. This book contains a kindergartner's guide to spirituality. This is simple math. The simplest form of a spiritual experience that, if we do it properly, works 100% of the time. All this other stuff doesn't work 100% of the time because my mind may not be right for it. But my mind gets right if I do the steps out of this book properly. It takes me and delivers me to a place where other texts can make sense to me. Suggestions about these texts may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. It doesn't just say Christian people. It doesn't just say Buddhist people. It just doesn't say Islamic people. Religious people. Go find some. Dive in. There's more there. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or right action. This is tying us back to the 10th step. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, and foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. This is my experience. This is a promise. When I was out there trying to rearrange everybody else's life to suit me, I was tired all the time. Now that I'm out of management and I'm simply just a worker, my life is real easy. The big man takes care of most of the big stuff for me. I just have to show up, follow this inner voice, follow this sixth sense, this intuition, this consciousness that I get, and I get delivered to the right place. I get delivered to places. I have meditated on what I needed to do in a day, and it told me to go to a meeting that I never go to. And I always ask why. I don't usually get an answer. And I'll say, "I'm not going to go to that meeting. It's Saturday. I want to drive to my parents. I'm going to go to the lake." And as I'm driving, I find myself getting off at that exit anyways. I find myself going to a Saturday meeting I never go to. And I sit down, and in my chair, I said, "I don't know why I'm here. I guess I'm supposed to pick up a sponsee." Picked up three that day. Two of them didn't actually want a sponsor. They just wanted a name on a sheet. The other guy was a crazier than hell guy that lives in Houston, Texas, and still sober. I was delivered to that meeting that day to sponsor this guy because something in my makeup had a message that would connect with this guy. That's what God is. That's how I experience God. That only happens if I clean the signal a little bit, slow the chatter down that's going on up here. Because when I tried to sit down and meditate for the first time, it was real busy. A lot of stuff going on. A lot of crazy thoughts. I started with 2 minutes. When I could do that, I went to 3. When I could do that, I went to 4. Then I went to 5. Then to 7. Then to 10. Then I got cocky and tried to go to 20. That got crazy. I had to back it down. I went back down to 15. Then I went to 20. I've had experiences where accidentally I meditated for over an hour because my timer, my phone was silenced. And you, like Tarek said, there's a point 10 to 12 minutes where you seem to get in this flow of things where the outside world just stops. And so the difference between, for me now, the difference between 20 minutes and 30 minutes is really non-existent. I find that 30 minutes sometimes somehow messes up my schedule of my day, but for me, because I've been meditating regularly for the last 5 years, that 10 to 12 minute time's creeping back. I think it's around 7 or 8 minutes now where I can really get into the flow of whatever this thing is. It's an energy flow. Unless you've been there, you can't describe it. And it doesn't happen every time. There are times like I try like hell to get into this meditative state to experience that calm, peace, easy feeling, and it doesn't come. I'm thinking about some crazy sexual escapade that I had years ago with some girl that like why am I thinking about this stuff? And it's got me all locked up. That happens. But it's practice, practice, practice. If I'm always practicing, I can't screw up. Because there's no arrival place. There's no place to get. It works. It really does. Believe me, it works. We alcoholics are undisciplined. So we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. This is from one of the 11-step readings. This is called practice. Spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practiced for the day, then you have won. If you were lazy for the day, then you have lost. Self-cultivation is the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic intuitions, or sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those things are only highlights in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it is prayer, then pray every day. If it is meditation, then meditate every day. If it is exercise, then exercise every day. Only then will you be able to say that you are truly practicing spirituality. This methodical approach is reassuring in several ways. First, it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just to practice is already good. Secondly, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you will gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say to yourself that you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back on years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum that it has given you? That's what we're talking about here, guys. Is what Tarek and I experience. What Tarek and I do, we don't live in the same world that you guys do. We just don't. And that's not an egoic statement. That's a statement of fact out of our own experience. We have entered the world of the Spirit. It is a cool ass place to be. We want you guys to come with us. We want everybody to come with us. But we can't take you there. You have to go there yourself. The 10th and the 11th step are the access point for the world of the Spirit. But you can't go there unless you've done the rest of the steps because you won't know what you're looking for. You'll still have too many of those fail-safes put in for you to truly experience the wonderful experience of God. So, I'll close with this sentence or with this little paragraph here because this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter, the next 5 chapters, are entirely devoted to the 12th step. So, hopefully we got you guys interested in the 10th and the 11th step. We had We could this session could have gone for another hour because of the things that we could talk about with this, but we know we would have lost you. So we're going to take a 15-minute break and then 20-minute break. So let's come back at 9:15, and Tarek's going to speak for you.